Good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High sitting with you this morning. It is 7:40, so it is now time for Greenside Up. And in studio with us today from the K-State Extension office is Jacob Weber and Wendy Powell. Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Well, Jacob, I asked what you wanted to talk about today, and one of the things you wanted to talk about was gardening mistakes.
Well, yes, we're at the end of the gardening season, and pretty much time to wrap things up. And this is just an idea that popped in my head on the way over this morning. I think, what do I need to talk about today? Okay, some gardening mistakes. I don't have a top 10 list, but I put a small list together here. And I'll hit off with the first one. Relying on pesticides to take care of your problems. That would maybe a primary mistake that gardeners make. So we got a issue in the garden, and there's got to be a spray can somewhere that we can use to remedy the situation. That is actually replacing what I call good gardening practices or managing the garden in a way that avoids the issues that commonly can occur on, say, plants that we select to grow that are not well adapted to the area or very prone to diseases. Another gardening mistake: if you're going to use pesticides, you should read the label. You should read the label before you even buy the product, because if you have an issue with a specific type of pest, and you do need to use a pesticide to control or help manage that issue, I shouldn't say control, because there's no absolute control of any pest. If we use the pesticides to manage issues, read the label, find out if the product is actually going to work on the type of problem we have. If you don't know what type of problem you have, you need to get it identified properly, and that's what we're for here at the Research and Extension offices. And so we identify the problem. Can that problem be managed without pesticides? If it can, then we'll do it that way. For example, you can greatly reduce the need of fungicides by just making sure that you have good air circulation, adequate sunshine on the plants. Of course, this year that adequate sunshine was a little bit elusive because we had quite a bit of rain. So I read the label and make sure that product is labeled to be used on, for example, you're using growing a food crop, make sure it's labeled for food crops. And there's been situations where I've been called and a person asks if they can go ahead and consume the food product because they applied a pesticide that was not labeled for food crops. And of course, they sprayed the plant first and then they read the label second. And then they found out that, oops, we did something wrong. So they're asking me to tell them it's okay to use that product. No, it's not okay. That product needs to be destroyed because it has a pesticide used on it that is not fit for human consumption. So that's another problem associated with gardeners. Another problem that a lot of gardeners are guilty of, including myself, is not planning. Let's get an idea of what we want to do in that garden or yard. And sometimes it requires some experience and making mistakes. And after a few years of making mistakes, we should start getting a little bit of intelligence accumulated in our brains that enables us to maybe make some plans to avoid those mistakes. So that's another common gardening mistake. Another mistake that's often made is planting too much. We get our new gardener, and we have all sorts of things we want to grow in that garden, so let's get a little bit of everything and throw it in that garden and start crowding the plants together. Another common mistake, crowding plants. Plants need adequate space between each other so that they have adequate sunlight, to accumulate in their plant body to grow, maybe produce flowers or produce fruit and vegetables. And so if we crowd those plants together, those plants are now competing with each other, and the actual outcome is a reduced floral display, perhaps, or reduced production, and those plants are actually becoming weeds to each other. Now, not managing weeds, plant a garden, and okay, there you go. It looks all nice and pretty when that comes up, but the weeds come along too, and weeds are a serious competitor, and they need to be taken care of. And there's a good way of managing weeds. It's called a hoe, and that works quite well for market gardeners. They may also incorporate the use of pre-emerge herbicides to help manage weeds. Some may actually use other products. Mulch, for example, helps control weeds, conserve soil moisture. So a good plan to manage the weeds is very important. And then another serious mistake that a lot of gardeners make is fertilizer, the use of fertilizer. The idea that you put fertilizer on the ground, that's actually food for the plant. It's not food, it's minerals. The food for the plant comes from the photosynthetic process. But fertilizer has some serious effects on plants. A little bit has a very important effect. It improves the plant growth in soils that are nutrient deficient. A mistake is made when using fertilizer is not getting a soil test. So we'd like to do a soil test so we can have a fertility management plan for that garden. And then the application of fertilizer or manure is made at a rate, a specific rate, pounds per 100 square foot, or pounds per acre, tons per acre. So we need to know what the application rate is going to be. It's not something that you guess about. You need to get the calculator out and figure out how many pounds of fertilizer you're going to put on a 1,000 square foot garden, for example. It doesn't take much. And a common mistake is putting on too much. And then we have issues with production or actual crop injury from putting on too much fertilizer. So those are some of the common mistakes that gardeners make. I can come up with some more lists, but that's the end of my list right now.
So, yeah, that is quite a few things to think about, especially when you're gardening. Again, as you said, like the pesticides and you gotta watch out what you're putting on your like you said, don't do the spray first then read.
Yep.
Do it the other direction.
That's right.
So anyway, we also have in studio, we have Wendy Powell. And Wendy, good morning.
Hi.
You were wanting to talk about complete rations today.
Yeah, so kind of like a topic Jacob was talking about there, getting some tests done on your soil so you know the appropriate amount of fertilizer to put on your garden. Well, that can be translated to some livestock productions as well. So whenever you have cattle or sheep or goats, hogs even, you want to make for sure that they're getting a complete ration. Make sure all of their nutrient requirements are being met. So to do that, we need to have a complete idea of what we're feeding them. So what they're going to be eating in the pasture that they're turning out on for the winter, any hay that they're going to be eating, and any grain or supplements they'll be getting, minerals, etc., salt. So one of the things that folks need to be thinking about is the hay that they've either baled this summer or if they've purchased some. Take a good sample of that and make for sure that you know exactly what you're going to be feeding your animals. So just because you have a bale that is solid brome or solid fescue or solid Bermuda doesn't necessarily mean you can go by the general averages of what the nutrients are in that bale of hay. So, for example, whenever you pull a forage sample out of a bale and the hay looks like it has what I would call caramelized. It's changed colors, but it's not rotten. It's just kind of a different color of brown than fresh grass dried out would be. That's because the bale was put up a little bit wet. And so it's going to have about a 20% lower protein value across the bale. So that caramelization process really reduces the value of that hay. And even though animals really like it, it's still going to reduce the nutrients that they're going to be receiving. So they're going to be eating a lot of fiber, which they do need, yes, of course, but it's going to reduce the capacity they have in their tummy to consume the nutrients that they really need. Last year, there was a lot of problems with cattle slipping calves, cows that were losing their calves because of vitamin A deficiencies. So this was happening across the Midwest. Producers were just losing calves. So research was done. The vets up at K-State took a look at those herds. And sure enough, those forages that those producers were feeding were deficient in vitamin A. So even though the producers were following their protocols with offering hay that is nutritious, according to the books, the bale that they were actually feeding didn't quite meet averages. So then there was problems. So what you need to do is make for sure you know exactly what's in your hay bale. And then when you know that, you can go to your list of your cow's requirements. So she needs X amount of protein. She needs X amount of energy. She needs X amount of selenium, salt, all of this huge list of needs that she has. And you can meet those requirements through other means, corn, soybean hulls, cottonseed hulls, mineral mixes, etc. And you can work with your feed store on those custom mixes. There's bagged rations that you can purchase to meet those needs. Or I'd be happy to sit down with you and your forage sample to make for sure that your animal's needs are being met. That's one of the services that I can offer for free. I can come out to your operation and take a look at what your supplements are with. If you have a plan for supplements or if you're just needing a direction to go there. So I'm happy to discuss that with folks.
So I, again, so they can like actually come out there or they can call you to discuss that.
Yes.
And what is the number that they can reach you at or where, and also where is your location at?
So my home office is in Altamont, so I can be reached at 620-784-5337.
Okay. And again, if you guys have any questions that you'd like to call, you can call our open line. It is 251-6909, 1-800-252-5443, 1-800-252-KGGF. If you have any questions for Jacob or if you have any questions for Wendy that you would like to call right now, we can absolutely do that. Jacob, I was listening to something that we ran a little bit last week, and it was about going ahead planting trees during this time of year.
That's right.
And a couple of tips about planting trees about this time of year.
Okay. Fall tree planting, one of the things we can do, of course, we can take advantage of some end of the season bargains that often occur. Nurseries having leftover trees from the spring. Of course, these would be probably container grown or bald and burlapped trees, and there may be some really good selections available yet for a bargain price. But we can put those trees in the ground. Tree roots, you have to think about growth above and below the ground. Of course, above the ground, when winter sets in, we're going to have dormancy. We don't see any growth on the above ground portion, but in the soil itself, roots are pretty much continually growing all the time. Now, when it gets cold, they don't grow as much, and when the ground freezes, they don't grow anything until that soil starts to warm a little bit. But the ground is fairly well insulated, so temperatures in the soil at 4 inches deep don't dip down that far, so the roots can continually grow. But in the fall of the year, when the soil is still warm, but the air temperatures may be pretty cold, that warm soil allows for some root growth. And so we plant put our trees, plant them in the fall, we may get a little bit of root growth that helps establish that tree in that particular location. Same rules apply for planting trees in the fall as planting spring. Wide hole, spread the roots. Don't fill the planting hole with all sorts of, quote, good things like potting soil and a lot of peat moss and stuff like that. The soil that comes out of the hole is what goes back in, because the roots need to grow in the soil that they're going to be they're planted in. And so amending the soil is never really a good idea. If you're going to amend the soil, do it over the entire root zone of the tree that's going to grow. You're going to be working in peat moss and stuff in the area for 25 to 30 feet in diameter instead of just a little planting hole. So we're about out of time here.
Yeah, we need to go ahead and take a break so we can hit our top of the hour Fox News. But we will have more with Wendy and Jacob coming up at about 8:10. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. It's time for part two today of Green Side Up. We bring back into studio Wendy Powell and Jacob Weber. And Jacob, there were a couple things that you were talking about, and even Wendy asked you this question off air before we came back on about twig girdlers.
Twig girdlers, yeah. We got received quite a few calls about this particular insect. And the unique thing about twig girdlers, of course, you see branches, small branches. We're talking about like 2 foot long, with the diameter of the branch being about the size of your middle finger on small people, or your little finger on big people. And maybe the beginner size pencil, no larger than that, and actually sometimes smaller in diameter. But when you pick up the stick or the branch and you look at it, and it looks like something cut it off, because it has a real smooth ring around the outside and then a little bit of a splintered center on the inside. And so you say, well, little beaver's been in the tree chewing on the branches and cutting them off. And big concern is this going to kill my tree? No, it's not going to kill your tree. It's an insect thing. It's an insect called a twig girdler. It has a 1-year life cycle. The life cycle begins with egg laying. Egg laying is done by female insects. And so this is a female insect issue that is associated with the problem. Just like mosquitoes, it's only the females that are after the blood. It's a reproductive thing. Like the mosquito, it's a reproductive thing to get the blood. The twig girdler, the reason she's cutting that notch in that twig and that green branch in the tree, she does this during maybe late July, early August, mid-August, is activities going on at that time. It's an egg-laying thing. She's laying eggs in that end of that branch there. And if you know what to look for, little pin-sized holes, maybe where the branch branches off into a smaller twig. It'll be right there at that little joint. But there'll be several little pin-sized holes various places on that branch. It should cut the notch in the branch. The reason the notch is cut, because those when that little larva hatches from that egg and begins consuming the inner bark tissue and the inner wood tissue, that's what they live on. If that tissue is filled with sap, the insect dies, the larva dies. So the notch is cut to stop the flow of sap to the end of the branch, so it makes a suitable habitat for the little offspring to develop in. And so that branch is kind of girdled. The sap stops flowing into that branch, but the branch still remains attached to the tree. And so after egg laying activity is all done, insects are gone, no more insects around. Get a little wind, maybe mid to late September, early October, and that severed branch starts to break, falls off out of the tree, and then we start seeing branches laying on the ground. I figured, well, that's when they're active. No, they've already been active. They've been gone. They're already gone. And so you have the branches laying on the ground. And they, well, do I need to do something right now? It's too late. You can't do anything about it anyway. And the other flip side is this: it's not worth doing anything about it other than just picking up the branches and throwing them in a pile, maybe burning them, I guess. You destroy the little larva, poor larva, that are going to be killed in that fire. So you clean up the branches and you think, well, I've solved the problem. I'm not going to have any twig hurlers next year. Oh, well. The adult female insect is a very strong flyer, so you clean it up in your yard, but a half mile away along a fence row or something like that, there's a whole bunch of little twig hurler branches laying on the ground, and twigglers reproduce there, and then they hatch. Well, they already hatch. They're feeding on the inside of the branch. When they mature, they exit the branch, or they pupate in the branch and then exit as an adult the following midsummer in maybe early July, late June, early July, and they mate, and then the activity proceeds again for the next year. And of course, they females are flying around. They see your trees there, suitable habitat for egg laying, and they do it again. And you have branches again next year that are laying on the ground. It can happens year after year. It's happened for hundreds of thousands of years, I imagine. And all those pecan trees and elm trees, they've survived all that time with twig hurlers, so it's no big issue. You're wasting your money trying to control them. Just pick up the sticks.
Absolutely. So, again, that's twig hurlers, and talking about that, I heard that last week, and also Wendy asked you about that off air. And Wendy, a couple things I was wanting to go over with you, getting back to what you were talking about earlier. What is a body condition score?
I'm really glad you asked. So a body condition score is a way that we can look at our animals and tell visually if they're having their nutrients met. So it's in the end of the day, it's a score of the fatness on the animal.
And what body parts are looked at in this process?
Sure. So that's going to be, we're looking at the ribs, and we're looking at the tail head area, or down the back leg through the round. We're looking at the spine. We're going to look in the brisket area. And all of these places are where an animal is going to store fat when they're in good condition, or where they're going to lose weight from whenever they're not in good condition, when they're not having their nutrients met. A score of 1 is going to be an emaciated animal, one that's going to have all of their ribs showing. This is going to be an animal that you're going to look at it and say, whew, that one is in bad shape. So that goes all the way up to some scales have go to 9 and some scales go to 7. So most commonly we use the scale of 1 through 9. A score of 9 is going to be what I consider roly-poly fat. So this is an animal that really waddles around and just has fat rolls everywhere, large pones at their tail head. So on either side of the tail head, there's these big old balls of fat. It's not often that we see an animal at a score of 9 just because they usually get more exercise than what that's going to entail. But we're really looking for a score of 4 or 5. When we're going into winter here, we like our cows, our ewes, heifers, all of our doe goats. We like them to be around a 4 or a 5 just because that's in good condition. If they've still got a calf on them that or a baby on them that's suckling. But they're also pregnant, so they're going to be giving birth again this spring. So a score of 4 or 5 is going to put them in good condition to get through a cold winter. And Jacob, I've heard that this winter is going to be really cold, so maybe that'll help with the twig girdlers.
Okay, you're making a prediction.
Yes, I am.
All
predicting.
Right, can we bet on that one?
Yes, lunch.
Lunch. Mm. That's so, a pretty heavy bet. I don't know if I'm going to lock on that one or not.
So whenever our animals are in good shape going into winter, then that helps our feed bill because we're not trying to make them gain weight to stay in good condition. Whenever animals are a score lower than 5, then that's when we really have to watch the feed that they're taking in, make for sure that all of their nutrients are being met, and make for sure that they can stay in good condition to have milk when that birthing activity happens.
So basically kind of the sweet score to get in is around 5 or so.
Yes.
Because you don't want to be too high or too low. When and how does one body condition score?
Okay. So whenever... Anytime you're looking at your animals is a good time to look at the condition of them. So that can be every day, or it can be a couple times a week whenever you're out if they're animals on pasture. But really, you want to select a time of year. Often that's going to be at weaning or whenever you're moving pastures with them. So right about now is when a lot of cattle producers will be doing this. You want to take that time to analyze each animal individually and go ahead and jot down a number. And if you have your own personal scale, that's fine, just so long as you remember it from year to year. So you're just going to take a look at each animal individually and write down, you know, what condition she's in. If you've got a lot of low numbers, if you've got a lot of 2s and 3s and 4s, then maybe that's an indication of your nutrient plan right now that is not meeting all nutrient requirements. If you've got a lot of animals that are 6s, 7s, 8s, then maybe you're putting too much money into feed, or you've got a lot of forage available that you can increase some grazing on with some other animals and spread that wealth around a little bit.
What about bulls? Is it the same for bulls as well? The body condition score and whatnot?
Sure. Yeah. So we definitely need to make for sure we're taking care of all of the sires, because that's half of making an animal right there. So we're looking at a score. We want a score of 5.5 to 6.5 for our bulls that are going into a breeding season, whether that's a fall breeding season or a spring breeding season. We want to make for sure that they're in excellent shape. Bulls or any other sires that are lower than that might not have quite enough energy to get their jobs done. Bulls that are heavier than that will have a little bit harder time on their joints getting the jobs done. So we want to make for sure they're in that sweet spot as well, and not too heavy and not too light.
And are cows the same as heifers in this instance as well?
So that's an interesting question. So heifers, ewes, first time does, fillies, anytime that they're their first time giving birth, everything is going to be just a little bit more exaggerated with them. So if they're not having all of their nutrients met, then it's just going to be a little bit more severe for them. So we definitely want to make for sure we're keeping an eye on all of those body condition scores with all of our first time birthing animals, because it's just going to be a little bit more extreme for them.
Okay. And do you have any final tips about body condition scores?
Sure. So I just suggest that folks keep it simple. It's not rocket science. Usually your gut instinct is going to be pretty easy to keep track of. Whenever you're doing this, just be intentional as well and be consistent across your pastures. Whenever you're pretty lenient in one pasture but harsh on another, then you're not going to be able to go back at the end of the day and look at those numbers critically, because they won't necessarily be comparable. Some other things to think about. Your scoring system might be slightly different than your neighbor's. So if somebody says to you, yeah, your heifer looks like she's a 3 and you think she's a 6, that doesn't necessarily mean that y'all are wrong. It just means that each one of you has a different scoring system. And so you have to make sure you're doing your own work on this homework assignment.
All right. Well, it looks like we have a phone call, so let's go ahead and get to the phone lines. Caller, you're on Green Side Up. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, just fine. Hey, I've got a question for Jacob. This probably goes along with his gardening mistakes, but I planted some rhubarb this spring, and of course I didn't pick any, but it's done real well this summer. And I was just wondering, since it's going to freeze, would it be all right to pick some of that now, or?
Probably a little bit would be fine, yeah.
Okay. It,
I don't know if the quality is going to be there like it typically would be in the spring. Of course, you're harvesting leaf petiole is what you're using. You're not using a stem or anything else. So that petiole doesn't tend to get any woody tissue in it, but it may get pithy, and it may not be as desirable. Go ahead and pick a little bit of it. The qualities may not be there.
I thought I'd pick enough for a pie anyway.
There you go.
It's got real healthy.
Okay. Yeah, you probably should enjoy it because number one problem with rhubarb in this area is crown rot, and you're probably going to experience that.
And, I've had experience before and dying off shortly, you know, a year or two, but I planted it up on a pile of dirt I had.
Okay.
It drained real good this year, and it's done real well.
Okay, very good. I hope it continues to work, but my recommendation to solve crown root problem is to move to Iowa.
Oh.
Minnesota would be even better.
Well, caller, do you have any more questions?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. You have a good day. And again, if you do have any questions for Jacob or Wendy, our numbers are 251-6909, 1-800-252-5443. If you have a question for them, go ahead and give us a call here in just a few minutes. But again, a lot of good things that you guys brought up today. We brought up the twigglers. We brought up the gardening mistakes. Of course, we just had the call about it. And also Wendy bringing up about body condition scores. So, again, guys, I thank you very much for coming in today, talking about all these great things. And we'll see you again next weekend next week.
We will be in Manhattan.
That's right.
We're going to have to miss next week because we are contracted. We have to go to annual. Conference.
Woohoo!
There we go.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
You better believe it.
But I remember you guys telling me that last week, and I've completely blanked out on it this week. But so we'll see you guys, I guess, again in 2 weeks.
2 weeks, right.
All right. Well, again, this is a Green Side Up right here on the Mighty 690 KGGF.